Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
Bureau, and especially relate that to the question of money, because without any intention to sound unthankful, I still would like to point out that receiving 5,000 euro even, to a project like Pirat Byrån, is not only helping to boost the activity, but it's also potentially a problem for us, because with getting money into a community of our kind forces it to some extent, formalize itself. And in order to make democratic decisions about what to do with the budget, a clear line must be made separating insiders from outsiders. It's not that we would be enemies to formalization, it's just that Pirat Byrån never had these clear borders between inside and outside. Sometimes we define our work as just an ongoing conversation, which sometimes unexpectedly spills over into temporary interventions of different kinds. So, our kind of digital communities may be best defined by the concept that was once established by the Russian curator Viktor Mizianu, the institutionalization of friendship. He writes that friends are not family, they're not lovers, they're not colleagues, but friends are something else. And maintaining friendship as the driving force within a group, especially if the group receives 5,000 euro, that means to having to walk a thin line between formality and informality. For us, it all started precisely 6 years ago, in September 2003, and at that time, basically as a semantic joke. There was already this anti-piracy bureau in Sweden, so we put up a website for the piracy bureau offering a pro-copying message. And we offered a place for anyone who wanted to critically discuss about copyright matters and educate each other in the use of the peer-to-peer file-sharing networks that were around at the time. This became a kickstart for a kind of hot public discussion in Sweden, which has been going on for all these years. And by participating in this discussion, we realized that we actually learned a lot. And since then, I would say that it's the curiosity that has made us maintain the project, instead of just letting it dissolve after a few months, as happened with many web projects. Most of all, I would say that we learned from each other's very different skills. Some people are good at hacking, others at slacking, some are good at art, others at theory, and so on. So the cure has always been the sharing of skills between different domains. The core of Pirat Byrån was really never the website. So it's quite funny to see, like, you know, down in the foyer, see the website, like, printed large on a wall, because we don't even visit it ourselves anymore. So the core of the project has always been the IRC chat rooms, which are characterized by a spirit of friendship and experimentation. One of the early experiments we did was with the new file-sharing protocol at that time. The protocol was called BitTorrent, and the experiment was called the Pirate Bay. This is the simple server that was first set up in a shoebox in someone's wardrobe. Some years later, the Pirate Bay was the world's largest BitTorrent tracker, co-directing a shockingly large amount of the total internet traffic of the world. How did that happen? The answer, I think, says a lot about digital communities in general. Indeed, there has been unique efforts made by the three system administrators. But they are not the Pirate Bay. They are only one part of the larger assemblage. So the Pirate Bay, I would say, is an assemblage consisting of hardware, software, domain names, a larger community of people like myself who are helping with everything from code to design and public relations. And last but not least, there is this swarm consisting of millions of file sharers all over the world. If you take away one of these elements, then the whole assemblage will become something else. So the tricky part is how to keep all these things together for a longer time. First, there must be money to pay for hardware and bandwidth, because there are quite many machines you need to run the world's largest BitTorrent trackers today. So there has to be money, but secondly, on the other hand, there must not go any money into activists' pockets, because if just some people will get profits from a web page, then the larger community of informal contributors will lose the interest and drop off after time. The Pirate Bay solved this by letting an external company sell very silly ads on the page, and also letting this company keep the profit after taking care of the bills for hardware and bandwidth. So, yes, the Pirate Bay abstained from profits, but doing that was a way to keep the line between outside and inside to be fuzzy. And that way, the Pirate Bay has remained being a hobby project for everyone involved. I would not say that it's even is idealism that stops the system administrators from directing the money down in their own pockets, but it simply follows from the dependency of community characterizing the projects that we are involved with. So, the symbolic value of the Pirate Bay has indeed enabled us to make a difference in amazing ways. But there are also problems with the symbolic strength of the Pirate Bay. Peer-to-peer file sharing was never meant to have one single ship as its big symbol. And today, when the Swedish court is targeting the three system administrators, claiming that they are assisting copyright infringement, then it might not be so easy to experience this as a hobby project for them anymore. Therefore, it's time to sink the ship and move on. You have probably heard that the Pirate Bay will be sold. Actually, what will be sold is the domain name. The rest of the elements in the assemblage is already about to be copied. You can already download the whole Pirate Bay from the Pirate Bay. The torrent here, it's 21.3 gigabytes, and you can put it up by yourself. But we don't need these centralized kinds of nodes anymore overall, because now there are already an independent BitTorrent tracker called OpenBitTorrent, free for anyone to use, and only doing the tracking, not even knowing what files that are tracked. There are also an independent torrent hosting site called Torrich, based on similar principles. So what will come after the Pirate Bay will not be one big ship, but something much less centralized, which will not be as easy for court to attack with accusations of assisting copyright infringement. So back to Piratbyggarna project. It's not dissolving, but it's changing its character very much. during this year. The borders are becoming even more fluid. It's not for us so much anymore about being a specific community, but rather about initiating and linking together lots of related and overlapping communities. Maybe one could say we even work a bit like a BitTorrent tracker. We initiate contacts which can then maybe be upheld without us having to do everything. And this is an amazing development during this year, which also involves actually, for the first time, as many women as men being in the public positions and front lines. In Sweden, we've just experienced an amazingly hot spring and summer of internet activism, which has gone far beyond the question of only file sharing, including practical solidarity with Iranian protesters, as well as successful campaigning to change the European telecoms packet. Still, it's very much characterized by a kind of spirit of joy centered on the IRC, when not centered in our old city bus, like you can see on this picture. Piratbyggen bought this bus last year and drove it from Sweden to Sydtirol, invited by the Manifesta Biennale. So transferring a digital community from the IRC chat rooms to the limited physical space of a bus has been a very productive experiment to us. So we used this bus as a base camp outside the courthouse during the first trial against the Pirate Bay earlier this year. We decided to treat the trial as a piece of theater named the Spec Trial. And what happened was actually that this island in central Stockholm, where the courthouse law is placed, became a physical meeting space which connected several digital communities together. In the courthouse, in the coffee houses around, and in the bus. We had a great time together. So after the Spec Trial was over, we had this larger, looser, and more energetic community, which remained ready to take on new tasks. However, this larger and looser community is still not a community of the kind that can make democratic decisions about the long-term use of 5,000 euro. Actually, there is always a risk that money can destroy such a community if money is not burnt off fast enough. Good for us, we have this bus, which is old, need constantly repairs and repainting. So a bus is a great way to burn money. We promise to do that. We will also probably spend some money at a gala party and similar activities, because such place-specific festivities are crucial to bring more joy to the digital communities which are working every day on the IRC. It's not that we romanticize short-sightedness, but rather that Piratbyggen's specific kind of community has proved best at long-term thinking when it is not burdened by money and of the formalization that follows from having money. So I want to thank you for the 5,000 euro, Ars Electronica, and I will promise that it will not last long. Thanks.
Great. I know that we're, is this on? Everybody? I know that we're a little bit over time, but I want to give the audience the first chance to ask some questions if you have any for any of the presenters. At any point, yep, there's a question right there.
Please. I have a question in German. David, Sie haben im Vorwort davon gesprochen, dass ein wichtiges Kriterium, also was David?
Nee. I only speak English. I'm sorry.
Can you please, could you use your translation tool? Um, Sie haben im Vorwort darüber gesprochen, dass ein wichtiges Entscheidungskriterium für die Preiswürdigkeit war, dass die Projekte dem Einzelnen Tools an die Hand geben, indem sie auch ihre, so als Einzelne in der Vernetzung Macht gewinnen können. Es war bei WikiLeaks viel von Transparenz die Rede. Ich begrüße die Entscheidungen, die Sie als Jury getroffen haben, sehr. Das finde ich sehr spannende Projekte. Aber so ein bisschen steht diese Erwartung im Widerspruch dazu, wer die Entscheidung trifft. Sie vertreten natürlich als mehr oder weniger geschlossenes System der Experten auch eigene Interessen. Und meine Idee, die mir kam während dieser Präsentation heute, ob es für ein Festival, das sich der Innovation verschreibt bezüglich Kunst, Technologie und Gesellschaft, nicht auch spannend wäre, der Meinung der Experten, die entscheiden, wer den Prix bekommt, auch eine Meinung, eine Weisheit der vielen gegenüberzustellen. Das können Externe sein, die vielleicht dann auch ein Votum kriegen, wer Preisträger werden sollte. Was halten, es wäre eigentlich eine Frage für die Prix Ars Electronica Ausrichter, aber stellvertretend an Sie, was halten Sie von der Idee, dass es nicht nur Inner Circles sind, die Experten, die entscheiden, sondern dass es eben auch eine öffentliche, transparentere Entscheidung ist, die dann durchwegs auch andere Kriterien reinbringen könnte?
I absolutely agree. So this was a question for those of you who didn't hear it with the headphones about the role of selecting the winners. I was part of the jury for the digital community category. There were about 6 or 7 of us, and 6 or 7 people don't have enough knowledge collectively to know about all of the proposals that were nominated and all of the nominations. And so in our catalog statement, in our jury statement that is printed in the catalog that I encourage everyone to read, we encouraged Ars Electronica to open it up to have a public voting process for the digital communities category on the website. I know that's difficult because it's hard to track votes and systems can be rigged and whatnot, but at least some sort of mixture so that we have more public participation of which projects are nominated and then which are chosen to win. The question also had a lot to do with what defines a community as far as exclusivity, including the exclusivity of the jury, and inclusivity. I think any community by nature is defined as something that's exclusive. And so I'm wondering for all three projects, how do you deal with keeping a community so it has its own spirit and its own shared memories, and yet not being exclusive, inviting new people into that community? How does that process work? Rasmus, do you want to
start? To us, basically, I think quite much of this process follows from our use of IRC as the central protocol for communication. Because on the IRC, you always are in several channels at the same time. Some are more open, some are less open. The usual lifespan of a chat room on IRC is that it becomes more open, more and more people comes into it, then sometimes it's the noise ratio flips over and it becomes uninteresting, it maybe dies out, but at the same time new channels are emerging for every specific project. So it has this, we work with overlapping communities, basically overlapping sub-communities where some are slightly more open, some are slightly more closed, and there has to be both of these kinds in order to maintain intimacy of some kind.
I think we perhaps we have the hardest job in the world at creating and maintaining a community, because our community is targeted by spies and intelligence agents even in Europe. So not long ago, a friend was ambushed in a car park in Luxembourg by a person who fits the description of MI6 and said that it would be in his interest to come and have a coffee with him, and proceeded to try and ask questions about WikiLeaks and about me. Within that context, who you let into your community and how you judge them and how you exclude them are something it is essential to judge right. And not when I'm in the West and for other people in the West, not for their protection, but for the protection of our sources. People shouldn't follow me to a meeting that I'm having with the secret source, obviously. And similarly, for people not in the West, the situation is more grim. So those people may face economic retribution as something that comes very quickly, and in some cases, retribution by physical violence. And we have also found that IRC, we have our own encrypted IRC on anonymous network, et cetera, that does provide a central hub for important people to come in. On the website, you'll also see that you can just click a link and it will start an encrypted IRC session to some people. So you can speak to someone in the community very, very quickly. Going through these extra barriers are hard. We have to segment a lot between people who need to conceal themselves or need to conceal other people from those people who really don't. So in our lawyers, as an example, they can be more or less publicly known. But even so, we're cagey about giving out information because even when someone themselves is not subject to any threat, the strategic communication is important. And because we deal with major spy agencies who do driftnet phishing of the internet, who spy on all communications leaving a country, as an example, leaving the United States, every single email is recorded by the National Security Agency. So when we're involved in some strategic issue, like revealing the talking points for NATO in Afghanistan, and how we'll go about releasing that and what the press cycle will be, that involves our community. But we always have to think carefully as to whether there what we're talking about is something that can be destroyed by spying. And in fact, it's easy to get too paranoid. And there has been some research on the IRA versus Sinn Féin. And I think this is kind of, although I hate to use the analogy for us, this is like the model that we have adopted. That is, Sinn Féin takes less risk and it's a public organization, Sinn Féin being the political face of the IRA, used to be the political face of the IRA in Ireland, whereas IRA are the people who did the risky work, not work that I usually don't approve of this work, but nonetheless they were the men taking the risks. And then there's a channel between these two. So exclusivity and inclusivity and sorting out which you put in which basket can be very hard.
We're about 12 minutes over time. Is there another question from the audience that you'd like? Yep.
I would like to take the chance to ask the round, a last question. I think that in many years of listening to people like you or being active as well, it was clear that it is very hard to make very technical questions very political. I think I don't have to explain to you that the special thing about digitization is that the nice trailer movie and the letter to my doctor are both put to ones and zeros. So especially on the internet, when you say all emails are covered and monitored, this is one problem. It was actually the founder of the Swedish Pirate Party who was the first politician that I heard that said digital communication has to preserve the right for private and anonymous communication. This is something that the state has to see that it is granted, which is a technical, expensive achievement. For instance, in Vienna, we had now a quantum cryptography evening. That will come. Will our state have the priority to see that quantum cryptography even could be something that digital citizens would use? Now, maybe this might sound utopian to you, but all I'm doing is to bring the human rights and the citizens' rights and the civil rights that should be normal in the West to the digital world.
It's a
as a challenge.
Can you clarify the question for everyone?
Yes.
So it's the role, will the state...
What I want to ask you is, do you understand this question from your work? Where does it touch your work in your communities? And I think one should make an approach, maybe not exactly from your side, openly, to make that clear, because I think only if people see what is endangered, we have the Data Retention Directive already, and all these things in Europe. But I think the consciousness of the public is growing in that sense. I'm not talking about quantum cryptography here, I just wanted to ask you a very short message. Is that part of your work, and would you say this has to be addressed by the UNO or by technical standards organizations? Is that a theme already? And I think it will be inevitable for work against corruption, etc., in all countries.
I'm going to slightly take the moderator's privilege a little bit for this, for the last batch of answers here, and put it in the same topic in a slightly different frame, which is, when we're thinking about social progress and how we want to change society, I think all three are purpose-based communities. Do you think that the focus should be on developing technical tools and techniques to change society or to influence political institutions?
I think that we feel that our role is mostly to encourage people to participate. In that sense, we don't see that much that we can influence higher up, authoritarian politically. So our work is political in the sense that what people publish in their blogs has always the tendency to be defending the right and the autonomy of the ground people, the grassroots people.
People don't change much as time goes by. Haven't changed much since the time of Rome. So the answer must be that the change we see in society mostly comes from the technological change that we see. But technological change without a desire and a will for people to adopt it and promote it also doesn't have any effect. And there are some changes, technological changes, that you can make in people's heads. So the Greek parliament, the first Greek parliament, was a matter of technology, a system that takes things in, deliberates, and puts something out. So technological change can be in devices, it can also be in the way people behave with each other as a system.
I don't think I would like to choose between technological tools and political institutions, but rather I would say that from our perspective it's more about building and sustaining communities of a kind that communities that recognize the conditions for their own constitution, the social, the technological, the economical conditions for their own constitution. So from that reflection over the one's own community follows politics in a quasi-natural way, I would say.
Okay, fantastic. I think what we've seen today is that just the definition and dynamic of community is so fluid and changing so fast that it's difficult as a category to describe what is and what is not a community. In fact, as part of the jury, we looked at quite a few memes of media that shifted around the internet, and everyone who is part of passing that meme around, does that constitute a community or not? These are questions for the future. It's going to be exciting to see who the winners are next year. Congratulations to all three projects. I think they're completely deserving of the award, and thanks for you guys for coming.